Good morning, everyone. Good to see everybody here, all packed in this morning. And we're going to see what God has for us this morning. You know, I saw an interesting statistic. It's going to take me a little bit to get this all set up here, but I saw an interesting statistic that said that Mother's Day is the second most attended church service beyond Easter. There we go. Second most attended church service beyond Easter. And I wonder why that is. One thing I'm thinking of is when people think about honoring their mothers, why does it involve, like, you know, going to church and that kind of thing? I mean, obviously you're getting together, so it's kind of that. But just think about that. It's pretty interesting. So good to see you all here this morning. Whether it's 89 or not, I'd say it probably is 89. So that's good. Got it the wrong way there. There we go. There we go. Okay. So this morning, what we're looking at is Elroy, the God who sees. So you may be thinking about that today is Mother's Day, and it is. So here's a quote. Danny was talking about quotes about Mother's Day. Behind every smile, there's a mother who has cried in silence, feeling the weight of the world on her shoulders. So happy Mother's Day to all of you. We could talk this morning about Proverbs 31. We could go through that. We go through the whole virtuous woman list. And you may feel encouraged by that, or you may feel like, you know, that's pretty heavy going through that. We're not going to do that this morning. We could also give a living eulogy to all the moms out here. And that would be well-deserved for sure. Because we definitely, no one would be here if it wasn't for your mom, literally, and so much more beyond just physical life. You think about all the, you know, all the things that your mother has taught you, and all that you ladies are pouring into your families every day is tremendous. The debt of gratitude that I have this morning for my mother and for each of you this morning, for my wife, what she gives to our children is tremendous. And it's immeasurable, really, that debt of gratitude. But today what I want to talk about is I want to talk about moms on the fringes, or I want to talk to moms on the fringes. However, this message is really going to apply to everybody. It's going to apply to male or female. It's going to apply to, you know, young people, old people. But really the focus is going to be more towards moms and so on. So the place we find ourselves today, so here's a couple questions that I have. I was thinking about, like, maybe you as a mom this morning, or anybody, so you put yourself in here, maybe you think, I don't fit into the community stereotype. Maybe my life experiences maybe have tinted the lens that I see things through, and so maybe I see things a little different than the people around me. Maybe I came from a different cultural background, and it's just, I can't see things the way, the people around me see in my community. Maybe I'm a single mom this morning, or maybe I'm a single mom living with my husband, but he's just checked out. And it seems like everybody else has a happy marriage around me. Or you might be saying this morning, no one really knows what I'm going through. No one knows what I'm really going through. You know, when I talk to people after churches today or throughout the week or whatever, maybe people say nice things to me. And they try to encourage me. They try to build me up. But they really don't know what I'm going through. And I know that inside. Maybe I'm afraid to share my heart, but, because I know there's got to be more, but I don't really know, I don't know what to do about it. There has to be, maybe I'm thinking there has to be more to life, but what is it? You might also be thinking this morning, must I keep giving even if I'm empty? I know that as a mom this morning, I'm sure you think that sometimes. You may feel like life is asking more than I have to give, maybe physically, mentally, spiritually. I don't know what to do, for my children. I know they need me. I know they need things, and I don't know what to do. If you can relate to this, well, then this message is for you. Whether you're a mom, whether you're a dad, whether you're a young person, whatever, it relates to you this morning. So meet Hagar this morning. That's who we're going to talk about. And we're talking about, she was definitely on the fringes. She was a mom for sure. And when I mean on the fringes, I mean maybe just doesn't quite fit into the mold that we're trying to, put everybody into. When I think about the story of Hagar, sometimes the Bible doesn't make sense. And I was thinking about, why does the Bible not make sense sometimes? So what? First of all, I was like, what makes something make sense? Well, when things make sense, it's when the information that we have aligns with our established beliefs. And so some of the things about Hagar's story here don't really align with when we're reading it. We don't see the whole picture. We just see like a little clip of things. And that's kind of how life is. We don't see the overall picture, the 40,000 foot view. We just see a little bit that's in front of us. And so we're like, this doesn't align. Like, these things don't align with the way we see life and our established beliefs. Well, we'll see how everything all ties together here. So we're going to learn lessons from Hagar, also from Sarai, Abram, and their sons Ishmael and Isaac this morning. We're going to be reading the story from Genesis 16 and also 21, but we're going to be just reading it in parts, and we're going to be commenting as we go. With that. Okay, the main points that we're going to be looking at this morning are, these are, as we go through the story, these are the main sections of the story with Hagar. So, conflicted, overwhelmed, pursued, and rescued. And then we're going to look at how these experiences that she had in the story, and some from Sarai and Abram, some of those experiences, we're going to see how they apply to us today. Okay, I'm going to get you up to speed on this location here. I don't know if any of you like maps. I kind of like maps sometimes. This is a map of Canaan and so on. So Abraham moved from up there. You see where that X is up top? So he moved from way up in here somewhere. Like we're way up on the wall there, 400 miles away. So he was up in Haran. It was about 400 miles from Shechem. Shechem is right there where that X is. So that's where Abram moved to. And then the famine went and forced him. You'll see this red line is the path that Hagar took. But anyway, Abram went the whole way from Shechem, the whole way over here to Egypt. Egypt is over here somewhere. And so that was like another 300 miles. So he's about... When he ended up in Egypt, he was about 700 miles from home. And so in Egypt is kind of where, like, this is a backdrop to chapter 16 where we talk about Hagar. So it started in Egypt, So he ended up in Egypt because there was a famine there at Shechem. And so he lied about his wife at that point, Sarai. He said, he told Sarai, he's like, hey, you tell Pharaoh, or you tell the people that you're my sister. She was very beautiful, and he was afraid that that Pharaoh would have him killed. Sounds like he was really watching out for himself more than anything, but he was afraid that he was going to have him killed if he found out that that Sarai was his wife. So he said, she's my sister. Pharaoh ended up taking her, and he wanted to marry her, and so... Pharaoh decided he's going to give Abram all kinds of nice things. So he gave servants, like men and women servants to him. He gave him like livestock. It lists out different types of livestock. He was giving all this stuff to Abram. Like, here you go. Like, your sister's awesome. Here you go. And then he found out that it was actually Abram's wife. And then he panicked and he's like, this is awful. I can't believe that you lied to me. He's like, get out of here. And he said, just leave, get out of Egypt. And so so Abram went from Egypt the whole way up through here. And then he ended up in Hebron. He never made it back up to Shechem. Instead, he ended up at Hebron. But what a lot of people think is that's where Hagar came from. Like, she was probably one of those servants that was given to Abram at that time. It says that she ended up being Sarai's servant. Abram had an issue here with running ahead of God and throughout his life. He was promised, going up to this chapter, God had already promised that he was going to become a great nation. It was through him that there was going to be a great nation created, God's chosen people. And he's like, I don't have any children. He told God one time before this. He's like, I don't have any children. He's like, Eliezer, who's my number two, my right-hand man, he's going to be the one that's going to inherit everything after I pass because I don't have any children. He's like, let's just have that pathway go through Eliezer. And God said, nope, that's not how it's going to be. You're going to actually have a son. And then that's where we end up getting to the story about Hagar. What I found was interesting was Abram, even with all his problems that he had, he was still a hero of faith, and God used him mightily. And in Hebrews 11, it talks about him being part of the heroes of faith. And it says in Genesis 15:6, it says he believed the Lord, and it was counted to him for righteousness because of his faith. And so it's just a reminder to me how God uses imperfect people to accomplish his purposes. Okay, so that gives you a little bit of a backdrop there. Actually, I keep bouncing all around here. I want to read, first of all, we're going to read verses 1 to 6 of Genesis 16 right now. Then we're going to get into how Hagar was conflicted. Okay, Genesis 16, 1 to 6. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had an handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said unto Abram, behold now, the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid, and it may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. And he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. And Sarai said unto Abram, my wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. But Abram said unto Sarai, behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. Okay, conflicted. What does conflicted mean? We know of the word conflict. Well, I thought of conflicted because what it means is confused or worried because you cannot choose between very different ideas, feelings, or beliefs and do not know what to do or believe. So I felt that Hagar was conflicted in this story. Much trouble, the first thing there, much trouble came as a result of godly people's sin. So Hagar was not from any kind of God-fearing background or anything like that in Egypt. They worshipped idols. They worshipped the emperor. I'm not exactly sure what their worship looked like, or they had different gods and so on. And she did not fear the one true God. Well, anyway, she came to Abram, and he was a God-fearing person. Sarai was a God-fearing person. However, there was a lot of problems here in the choices that they made. These God-fearing people were taking matters into their own hands, which is a problem. She had likely heard about the blessing and the promises to Abram. She lived in their house or in their tent or whatever, like probably in there right there with them. She was Sarai's maid, and she had heard about this, I'm sure, because it was a big deal to Abraham. And, you know, when she heard about how Sarai's plan, like Sarai was trying to take matters into her own hands, she's like, I'm not going to be able to have a child. So go take my maid, get married to my maid, and then have a child with her, because I'm not going to be able to have any children, because she was getting older. And so I'm sure Hagar felt like she was the path to God's promise of a great nation at this point, because that's how Sarai was presenting it. When she got sent away, she was likely turned off by the God of her mistress. Like, here you are, you're trying to use me, and then you send me away. One thing for sure is that, I think that Sarai, there was probably some jealousy involved with this whole situation. And that's why, like, I don't understand why they tried to have multiple wives. Like, that would never work. Like, there's going to be this kind of situation with multiple wives. That's why God's plan of one man and one woman is the best plan. 100% it's the best plan. Anyway, there was probably some jealousy from Sarai, and it created some of these dynamics. So both Hagar and Sarai had made bad choices. There was disrespect from Hagar. They said she despised her mistress. She despised her. As soon as she saw she was with child, she just despised Sarai at that point. And then, you know, maybe some pride and so on. But both of them had issues. It's not like one was right and one was wrong. Like Sarai and Hagar, both of them had problems here. The good thing is God was not surprised by Hagar and Sarai's mistakes. God will pursue us anyway. Even if we make bad choices, God will still continue to pursue us. Okay, what does it look like today when you're conflicted? Maybe you're facing a major life decision, and this could be for anyone. Well, like, what is a major life decision? It's something that has the potential to change the trajectory of the rest of your life. So, you know, we think of big things like your marriage. If you're considering getting married, that obviously has that potential to change your rest of your life, your career choices. Maybe you're just making a choice to take the road less traveled. So maybe you're making a choice in life to be different than the status quo, because you want different results than what the status quo is getting. Another way you might be conflicted today is maybe you're to share your heart or not with people. So maybe you're a bit of an introvert, but you realize that you have value to give to other people, but you're afraid. And you also have value to gain from other people. Maybe you've been wounded in relationship. But the thing is, if you've been wounded in relationship, you also can be healed by relationship. So that's maybe you're conflicted between those two things. Maybe trusting God versus trusting myself, which is easier? Well, it's easier to trust yourself, because we, like it said in the Sunday school lesson, we tend to want to trust in things that we can see and things that we can control. Well, it's easier to trust yourself, and we believe that we can control things anyway. But which is more powerful? Obviously, God is more powerful. God has the whole picture. Like, he can see that whole picture, the whole 40,000-foot view. We can't see the whole picture. And so why not partner with the creator of the universe? So much better than trying to trust ourselves. So we may be conflicted, though. We're like, do I trust in myself and try to control this stuff? Or do I trust in God? I can't see him. It's like he seems kind of distant even. Familiar or future. What I mean by that is We want to stay where it's familiar, even if we're in a bad situation. Like, we want to stay there because it feels normal and familiar to us or our future. Like, it keeps us stuck just staying right there in that familiar space. We know the quote, insanity is doing the same things, hoping for different results. And so that's what happens when we stay in, the place where it's familiar, like, and we're afraid to move out and where it's uncomfortable. Okay. The next thing we're going to look at is overwhelmed. So this comes from verse 6 primarily. So Sarai was overwhelmed as well. So I feel like Sarai had this, she heard Abraham talking about the path of God's blessing through her. And so she had this dream of having her own baby. Well, this was essentially giving up on her dream. She's like, it's not working, so I have to do something. And so that's when she brought up the Hagar concept. Was Abraham also giving up on Sarai's plan to fulfill this promise? This is whenever she sent Hagar away. I should probably look at verse 6. It says, Sarah dealt hardly with her at the end of verse 6, and she fled from her face. Sarai was being very harsh. I don't know what that hardly meant, but I think harshly she was very mean to Hagar at that point, and Hagar ended up running away. I feel like Hagar was a pawn of Sarai. Like, she was trying to use her to accomplish, to try to force this God's plan into action. So, did Abram and Sarai even think about how Hagar was feeling? She felt like, it feels like she was a pawn. And what'd she do? Finally, it was too much. She just had it up to here, and she's like, I'm going to run. And she ran. She headed out. So she was, headed back to Egypt. The world had no pity for runaways, but Jesus does. So they were a servant or a slave like this. I mean, they were a property of their owner, and there really was no pity for them from anybody. But we'll see how Jesus had compassion. What might be a way that you're feeling overwhelmed today? So maybe if you have a death of a vision, so maybe there's, it can be a lot of different things. It can be maybe a dream that you had. You fill in a dream that you had or a vision or something. One thing to think about is when there's a death of a vision, it means God is moving you on to better things for his eternal purposes. So I feel like the death of this vision was, Abraham wanted to realize this promise that God had for him, and they were literally trying really hard. They were trying all these options through Eliezer, through Hagar, wasn't working out, Hagar's running away. This was just a whole problem. They were overwhelmed. Sarah, Hagar, and Abram were all overwhelmed. Maybe a death of a vision for you might even be, regarding children, just like this, exactly like them, where nothing short of a miracle, will help you to be able to have a baby. And, it can be that same thing. So something has to change. When you're feeling overwhelmed, that's what you're thinking. Something has to change. But what? Like, who am I going to ask? Am I the problem? Like Sarai had said in verse 5, I think. She said, you're the problem, Abram. And then she's like, well, the Lord judge between you and me. Somebody is the problem. We don't know who the problem is, but something has to change. One thing on that is, if you're in that position, like if you find yourself here, like something has to change, but you're not sure what needs to change. Well, first of all, seek God's face. Like, ask him about it. Like he will absolutely lead you if you ask him. He never resents you asking. And then start with yourself. Like here, we tend to look around and say somebody else is the problem. Who can we blame? We're like, we're looking all around. Who can we blame? Well, start with yourself. And then as you work on yourself, then you'll be able to see more clearly as you look around. So Hagar was used and discarded. And this is one that we struggle with a lot. How can this be? Like in life, we see people that, you know, go through really hard situations. One thing about God is he gives everybody the power of choice. And regardless if you're a believer or not, he's going to give you the power of choice. And wicked people are going to make really bad decisions. And sometimes the people of God are going to make really bad decisions too. And he's not going to take away that power of choice that we have. He's going to, you know, he's going to work in our life. He's going to, you know, try to, you know, get us to choose his way, but we still have the power to choose. And those choices sometimes can absolutely ruin people and destroy people. Thinking about, like, you know, maybe you went through some situations like this. Your past is not the predisposition of your future, but it may be the preparation. What that means is it's not, you're not controlled by, you're not the sum of your past, for sure. Because God redeems. And Isaiah 61:3 says this, to appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give unto them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they might be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he might be glorified. So just remember, there's hope. God does redeem. So here we're talking about Hagar headed to Egypt. So she ended up, she was headed to Egypt. This was the path to Egypt here. And where she ended up was, let's go ahead and read Genesis 16:7-16 at this point. Give us a little background here and we'll look at this map a little bit more. Okay, 16:7-16. And the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way of Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, whence camest thou, and whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, return to thy mistress, and submit thyself under her hands. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child, and shalt bear a son, and shalt call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. And he will be a wild man, and his hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him, and he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. And she called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, Thou God seest me, which is where our title comes from. For she said, Have I also here looked after him that seeth me? Wherefore the well was called Beer Lahairoi. Behold, it is between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar bare Abram a son, and Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. And Abram was 86 years old when Hagar begat Ishmael to Abraham. Okay, so she was running. I thought I had the distance here, but I don't have the distance, how far it was approximately. I think it was, between 80 and 200 miles. It was kind of a broad range there. But anyway, people are not sure exactly how far she ran, but she was running away. And the angel of the Lord found her. Oh, there I have it right there. 80 to 210 miles. Okay. So who was this angel of the Lord? So I feel like this was actually a theophany. And what a theophany is a manifestation of God or Jesus that is tangible to the human senses. Here's another example of a theophany, because I really feel this was Jesus in the form of an angel. So here's another theophany. In Exodus 3, verses 2 and 4, I have it up here on the screen. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire. This is the burning bush experience. Out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush. And he said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. So this was it. It said the angel of the Lord appeared, but yet God spoke to him out of the bush. And so, I mean, you can disagree with me on that, and that's okay. But I feel like the way Jesus related to Hagar, the personalized care was typical of how Jesus showed up like 2,000 years later. And so that I think it adds special meaning to me when I think about this having been Jesus. Okay, so she was pursued. The shepherd seeks the lost sheep. Jesus seeks the lost sheep. And that's what he did to Hagar as well. You think about the Samaritan woman at the well, like he was seeking her. There's actually a lot of parallels between the woman at the well and the situation with Hagar, especially when we get into chapter 21. in verse 8. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, whence camest thou? Whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai. Abraham and Sarah talked about her, but the angel talked to her. There's a big difference there. She was called by name, and that's in that verse 8. It talks about that as well. So he said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, that personalized care. So this was to bring her to her senses. He said, the angel said, where are you from and where are you going? Of course he knew that. He knew who she was. He knew that she was Sarai's maid. He said he was trying to bring her to her senses. She was running away from anything, anywhere but with Sarai. And we would say that was justified. That's another thing that doesn't really make sense. But she was leaving everything. She was leaving the people of God. She was leaving them. Well, so the angel of the Lord, what did he do? He gave her the next step, and then he gave her a promise along with that. So he said to return and submit to your mistress. Imagine how hard that was. And but he also, the promise was that her descendants would be multiplied. I believe that was verse 10. I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. He gave her a promise right along with that. This was super hard on pride. Any pride she had, like, you know, she had run away because it had gotten so bad. But remember, she had despised Sarai, and Sarai dealt hardly with her, harshly, and she ran away. It was so hard on her pride. However, he's like, go back. So there was, you know, obedience that needed to be followed through with there as well. Okay. Elroy, the God who sees, what Elroy actually comes from is from the Hebrew text. When it talks about the God who sees there in verse 13, that was what it would have said in Hebrew was Elroy. That was another word for God that Hagar called him, Elroy, the God who sees. That's Hebrew. What does it mean to be seen? So you might have a different definition for this. Here's what I have. Someone recognizes you as a whole person, body, mind, and spirit, created in God's image rather than just a set of symptoms. It involves feeling deeply understood, validated, and loved with compassion, bringing your true self, including your spiritual struggles, into a safe place. So I feel like that's what the angel of the Lord did for Hagar at that point, and that should be our desire to do that for other people. We often want to hide parts of us. We don't want people to see everything. We want to create an image for them to see that's fake often. We want to create an image that we think that they want to see. Well, with Abba Father, we have nothing to hide, nothing to prove, and nothing to lose. Hagar in verse 13 was filled with tremendous wonder, like this holy wonder. She said in the end of verse 13, Have I really seen the one who saw me? It's a little confusing in the KJV there. In NLT, it says this. It says, she also said, have I truly seen the one who sees me? So she was just like, wow. Like she really felt seen at that point. What does it look like to be pursued today? God is moved by misery. So Hagar was not a believer before this. She didn't pray. She didn't cry out to God. But God was still moved by her misery, and he pursued her. He doesn't reject you just because you made bad choices. Even if you have a pattern of making lots of bad choices, he doesn't reject you because of that. He still keeps pursuing you because he knows there's more for you than where you're at today. Divine meetings. It's always a big deal when there's a divine meeting, and that's what happened here with Hagar, this divine meeting. Meeting with God always has some type of effect. It brings us to our senses, and then we choose what to do with it. We choose whether we're going to move towards him or whether we're going to move away from him. But when there's a meeting with God, something happens. Called by name. God knows us by name. He knows us intimately. And that's what it looks like to be pursued today. And then he gives us, just like he did Hagar, he gives us the next step and a promise. Like he only gives us what we can handle. He will not give us more than we can handle with his help. He may give us more than we can handle ourselves, absolutely. But what we can handle with his help, he never gives us more than that. He gives us the next step. Remember, often we don't know what to do. We don't know. We know something has to change, but we don't know what needs to change. He gives us the next step and a promise. And as we align with God's plan, we can claim his promises. But it does require obedience on our part to that next step that he gives to us. Okay, rescued. So this is Genesis 21. You can just go ahead and flip there. So there was a time frame that elapsed in between 16 and 21 where Hagar was obedient to Sarah, and she went back and she was Sarah's servant. She had her son Ishmael, and I think it was 13 years, I believe, was the difference here, 21. Okay, let's read verses 8 to 20. And the child grew and was weaned. This is also Isaac was born here. And the child grew and was weaned. And Abraham, and Abram's name changed to Abraham. Sarah's name, Sarai, changed to Sarah. Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad and because of thy bondwoman. In all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And also of the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And the water was spent in the bottle, and she cast the child under one of the shrubs. And she went and sat down over against him a good way off, as it were a bowshot. For she said, let me not see the death of the child. And she sat over against him and lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad, and the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said unto her, what aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him in thine hand, for I will make him a great nation. And God opened her eyes and saw a well of water, and she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad drink. And God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. So here were Hagar and Sarah at it again. So now Isaac was born, and so Sarah had a direct path to God's promise being fulfilled. And that was God's plan, to have his nation of Israel come through Isaac. Well, it was obviously bad how Ishmael was mocking Isaac. Like, that was a big problem, how he was doing this. Could it have been some generational patterns? Like, there is a possibility. You look at how Hagar was relating to her mistress Sarai earlier. She despised her, did that trickle down into Ishmael? I mean, there is that possibility. And also, we didn't read this, but like the blessing of Ishmael, or the blessing of Hagar, like through Ishmael, was he was going to become a great. There was a whole lot of people that were going to be descendants of him, but it said he was going to be a wild man. Everybody, like in his offspring, was going to be against everybody. As I was reading that, I was like, how could that be a blessing? Like, that sounds like. I guess that sounds a little more like a curse, but she felt really seen when she heard it. Like, she was just like, this is amazing. And so anyway, that's how she experienced it. Abraham was conflicted here. He was like, I don't want to send Hagar away. Like, I don't want to send Ishmael away. Ishmael is my son. He's 13 years old. Like, this is really tough. But it seemed he prioritized Sarah. And he was like, okay, Let's send her away. Let's give Hagar and Ishmael some water and some food, and send them away. I don't know if he thought they were gonna, I don't know what he expected. It wasn't enough to take them to Egypt. What was the plan? I don't know. He realized that Abraham realized that Isaac was the true heir, but he also loved Ishmael. Tears touch our father. Verse 16, it says, she sat over against him and lifted up her voice and wept, talking about Hagar. Psalm 56:8. I should have put that on here. I'll just quick look it up. Psalm 56:8. You keep track of all my sorrows. You have collected all my tears in your bottle. You have recorded each one in your book. God notices when you have tears. Hagar didn't pray, but God saw her. Okay, what does it look like to be rescued today? Problems are opportunities. So when we look at these problems that she was experiencing, or problems that we experience, problems are opportunities for us to get better. They're also opportunities for God to show up. Because often when we have problems and we don't know what to do next is when we're the most open for God to work through us, and for others to help us as well. The Holy Spirit prays for us. Do you realize that? That the Holy Spirit prays for us? And you can turn to Romans 8. Romans 8, verses 26 and 27. We're talking about being rescued today. Likewise, the Spirit also helpeth our infirmities. Verse 26, for we know not what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit itself maketh intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. And he that searcheth the hearts knoweth what is the mind of the Spirit, because he maketh intercession for the saints according to the will of God. So this is part of God's plan to rescue us. In verse 19, it talked about the well of water. He opened Hagar's eyes, and she saw this well of water. I feel like water is symbolic of salvation. Often it kind of is tied together. Jesus talks about living water. He talked to the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman. He talked about how what you really want, or what you really should be asking for, is this living water where you're never going to thirst again. And so here they needed water to survive. They would have died there in the desert if it would have been for water. But he opened her eyes and there was water, and they were able to drink that water. And rescue really is salvation. Salvation is why Jesus came. I mean, isn't that the ultimate form of rescue, is the salvation that Jesus brings to us? So here we're going to go back to these questions again. You might say, I don't fit into the community stereotype. Well, Elroy sees your pain. No one knows what I'm really going through. Elroy sees what others do not. Elroy knows what to do next. The last question there, must I keep giving even if I'm empty? Elroy is here today, right now, to give you that living water so that both you and your family will live. Okay, let's bow our heads for prayer. Dear God, thank you for each one here this morning. And I pray that you would just meet us where we're at this morning. Thank you so much for seeing us in the middle of whatever situations we have going on, and caring about us and providing the next step for us, and providing the courage and the sustenance to go through that if we just... align ourselves with you and submit to you and follow you. We know you're a good father, and that you have only the best things in mind for us. And we're so grateful for that. I pray you would be with anyone that's struggling, especially this morning. Maybe someone's even struggling with not being able to have children of their own, and they desire children so much, like Sarah I did here. And I pray that you would just meet them today. And I pray that you would bless them with children. And thank you so much for your love for us. And I pray that you would be with us today, be with us this week. Help us to just be an example of you and your care for others. Be an example of that to the people we meet this week. In Jesus' name, amen.